James, it's afternoon.
It is afternoon.
You know what that means?
That means I should probably get out of bed.
What it means. That's what it means. Woohoo! So, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Hopnology.
Yes.
So today we're going to talk about what I just poured into my glass, which is non-alcoholic beer.
Excellent. Good topic.
Before we get into it, a couple of things. Minor bit of housekeeping, just a bit. So we want to thank our new patron, Tim. Tim goes by just Tim.
Just Tim.
We don't know his last name.
Yeah. Thanks, just Tim.
Thank you, Tim. Mm-hmm. We'd also like to thank Sharon Prince while we're at it.
Yeah. I don't know Sharon Prince. Is she a new neighbor or something?
No, they're similar to Tim. They live in that one-name neighborhood.
It sounded funny the way you said it, Cher and Prince. It sounded like you said Sharon Prince. I'm like, who's Sharon Prince?
Who's Sharon Prince? You can fix that in editing. So I need to tell a story about my beer trip today.
Okay. And
I put it on Instagram, but I'm sure that it'll be a few days between that and when this gets put out there, this recording. So I ran out to pick up some beer at my local haunt at Reverie, and they're doing a small business relief, IPA that they brewed, and the proceeds are all going to small businesses that have had to shut down due to coronavirus, which is a wonderful thing for the community. And I get there, and I'm picking up 3-4 packs, that being one of them. And they come out with four packs, with 2 4-packs of small business relief, and tell me that someone came by in the morning, they wanted to pay it forward, and they bought a whole bunch of 4-packs and said, everyone who shows up, give them 1 extra on me. Which I thought was a wonderful gesture. And so instead of leaving the brewery and making a right to go home, I said to myself, well, what can I do now to pay it forward, because that's really the idea behind these things, is you make someone feel great and you give them a reason to do something else nice. And instead of making a right, I made a left. And I dropped off that extra 4-pack in the mailbox of an ER doctor who I know, who is, as we speak, at the ER dealing with folks and trying to help us all through this. So I thought it was a nice story to share. And, hopefully all of that kindness that's coming out of what's going on right now continues on long after we get back to business as usual.
I hope so. But that's a great story.
It made my day. It made my day. I hope it made my friend, the ER doctor's day. I hope it made the day of the person who's put the money out in the first place to do all this, that they're feeling good about themselves. I can't think of anyone that story would have impacted negatively. It's great for everyone.
Good. What kind of beer is it?
So, it is, let's see. I'd have to step away from the microphone to go find one because I'm not drinking it right now. It's an IPA. What is in the IPA? That I can tell you. It's got some interesting hops in it, actually. It is with Trident and Eureka hops. So I have yet to try it. I don't know if it's any good. I hope it is.
I hope too.
Yeah, the last thing I want to hear back from my friend is, I had a long day at the ER and you gave me this beer and it was just okay.
Yeah, Trident is a hop blend from Hopsteiner.
Ah.
They call it a specialty blend. It's 3 PNW hops, but they don't really say what they are. Supposed to be very tropical, fruity, citrusy, like pretty much everything else is being produced right now.
I understand that it's flying off their shelves, and part of that may be due to the the nature, the charitable nature of it, more than the beer nature of it, but I'm looking forward to trying it.
Good. Excellent.
So I'm not drinking that right now because I decided to go with something along the theme of our episode, which is non-alcoholic beer.
What did you get?
I picked up from Athletic Brewing, which is here by me, Upside Dawn, which is a golden ale.
Never had it.
It is quite tasty, I have to say. And no alcohol and 50 calories.
Yep.
So it's better than drinking a soda.
Yep. I had their Athletic Brewing Company's IPA and was pleasantly surprised. It's very, very well done. And it's, what, less than a 0.5% alcohol. So well done there. But let's talk a little bit about that market and what are they. We'll talk a little bit about the chemistry maybe. And just sort of give us a primer on non-alcoholic beers.
Alrighty, so just high level, what's going on in this market? So why now an alcoholic beer? Because there was a time that the only option was O'Doul's.
Right.
And that was never good.
And Sharps. Remember Sharps?
Oh, Sharps.
Yeah.
Wow. Sharps, yes. Yeah. I do remember Sharps.
Is that a Miller product? I think it was.
I think so.
Hold on. Dr. Google will tell me.
Yes. If you read it on the internet, it must be true.
Mm-hmm.
So those products, I think they can be best described as a check-the-box product. There was never really, I would say, an impetus to make that. It was before the craft beer boom, and it was never really important to make that a good beer. It was just a beer alternative.
Yeah, Sharps was introduced by Miller in 1989.
Okay. Don't know that it's out there anymore.
I think it is, actually.
Huh.
But anyway.
But yeah, I think that at the time, you know, pre-craft, you didn't have any incentive to make it a great beer. It was just an alternative to beer. And so we get back into today when beers are being judged much more strictly and there are so many more options out there. You can't just put out an O'Doul's or a Sharps and say, well, you know, if you're not going to have a regular beer, have one of these. It's got to be good.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when you're competing in a craft brewing market like in a tap room or something like that. I mean, there's plenty of other things now to drink than NA or low alcohol beer that, you know, just look at the fruity, fizzy drinks that are on the market now. And if you don't like the taste of, if you like beer that doesn't taste like beer, you're not going to go for one of these macro brewed NA beers.
Very true, because the intent is for it to taste like beer. So it's a beer. It's not even a beer alternative like those are. It's
beer.
It's an alcohol alternative, but it is beer.
Yeah,
it's beer. In chemistry as well as in name, which we'll get into later.
Mm-hmm.
So some things about the non-alcohol market that I dug up. This is interesting. It's too soon for 2020 numbers, but in 2019, 20% of beer drinkers surveyed opted for Dry January. They tried Dry January. In my notes, I said allegedly after that. I'm not sure why I wrote that. I think disbelief was what
I disbelief, was about. And where's the data? How did they gather the data? The 8 of my friends around the campfire told me.
I think they stood outside bars, and anyone who came out crying, they said, are you participating in Dry January?
Excuse me, are you the designated driver?
So they named this, I love these hashtag names, the Sober Curious Movement.
Sober Curious, nice.
Sober Curious. So I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. I just had to throw it out there.
I don't either.
So you've got the big companies that have been doing this for a while. Heineken's got a 0.0, Coors Edge. Budweiser put out Prohibition Brew in Canada in 2016, and I think it's so funny because Prohibition to me is an American term.
Yeah.
And they only launched it in Canada. So what the hell's that about?
Oh, I was going to rip into some Canadians, but one of our hopnologists, one of our tried and true hopnologists is a Canadian. So
hey, he is.
We'll rip on him on the Discord.
Well, that's true. This is more of a rip on the American marketing person who thought that was a good name for a Canadian beer.
That's Prohibition. True. Yeah. Well,
Budweiser put out Bud 0.0 in India last year, and they're working on a Budweiser Zero. So this has got momentum. Mm-hmm. And InBev made a comment. One of the executives there very recently said one of their global smart drinking goals is to ensure that low and no alcohol beer products, and we'll define those in a minute because they actually have definitions, they want them to make up 20% of their global beer volume by 2025.
Mm-hmm.
And my initial reaction to that is that's a huge shift.
I think, well, A, yes, it is a huge shift, but in thinking about that a little more when we talked about that earlier, notice they said global. And there are many, many other countries that have much more strict drink driving laws than the U.S. does.
Yep.
And I can't help but think that not only are there other, you know, global markets that may have had, maybe like, well, it's alcohol, so we're not going to drink it for cultural or maybe even religious beliefs. But if you make something that's non-alcoholic, now you open up a whole another market segment. So I think we have to be careful when we talking to our friends, you know, listen to the podcast and other across the globe. It really is a local regional thing. And I think that those macro brewing companies are probably looking for a new market expansion opportunity.
I completely agree. The global part of that is a big, big part of the issue. And certainly drinking and driving rules. I heard something pop there on your side. Very nice. The local drinking and driving rules certainly play a factor. Another piece which I thought was interesting, Spain, for example, non-alcoholic beer makes up 13% already of all their beer sales. And some of the theory around that has to do with the fact that, you know, drinking age is much more relaxed in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have very strict and always have had strict drinking ages. We still have that callback to prohibition and the cultural mindset that you have to drink responsibly, that drinking is something for adults and that people can abuse.
Yeah.
And those are all true statements, but I think there's more of a stigma around drinking in America than there is overseas. And as a result, what you have is that non-alcoholic beer is also looked at poorly because, well, if you're going to drink, you might as well get the alcohol out of it.
Right.
Whereas I think in Spain and other European countries, it's, okay, I like what this tastes like. Do I feel like alcohol today or not like alcohol today?
Mm-hmm.
There's no, you know, if I went out somewhere right now and ordered no duels, I would be mercilessly made fun of by my friends.
Of course. Well, and that has nothing to do with O'Doul's, actually. They just make fun of you.
Well, there's that too. I'm willing to take that and run with it.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah. No, but there's that. What are you, and certainly among men, what are you, not a man? What can I get you? Can I put a parasol in that drink beer for you? You know, says the guy drinking a hazy, juicy, fruity, something bomb, slushy concoction. But like here, I just quickly looked up Spain and Sweden have the most strict drink driving laws in Europe. So that may have play a part in having such a high percentage of low and non-alcohol beer on the market there.
Could very well be part of it, that they understand the risks and they're ahead of the curve in terms of putting out alternatives.
Right.
Although more likely than not, it's just that we're behind the curve.
Well, duh. America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I mentioned that there are lines in the sand, and it's so nice to see actual labeling that has teeth to it.
You mean like the opposite of organic?
Oh, gosh. Organic, and my favorite is still light, L-I-T-E,
yeah,
which
light
means absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
So low or reduced alcohol beer has to be less than 2.5%. Non-alcohol is less than 0.5%. And alcohol-free is less than 0.05%.
Yeah.
And at that point, you can label it as 0.0 ABV.
Yeah, because that's within the margin of error of the measuring of the instruments. So
you've got very, very distinct lines there.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting what you're starting to see pop up in the U.S. You've got breweries that are taking a stab at non-alcoholic. And one of my favorites, I haven't tried it, but I love the name. So Bauhaus Brew Labs in Minneapolis has a Hell's Lager that they do well with. And they've created a non-alcoholic version of it called NEH, N-A-H, non-alcoholic Hell's.
Hell's. Yeah, nice.
Hell's. So
we're going to have to ask Joe if he can get some of that and tell us what it's like.
Oh, absolutely. I just love the name. Even the logo on the can, it's a script, capital N, lowercase NH, and it looks like...
Nah. Awesome.
Fantastic. And then you've got something like what I've got here, this Athletic Brewing, and they have a very distinct plan. First of all, they only produce non-alcoholic beer.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I mean, even the name Athletic Brewing, the irony that I was even allowed to buy something with the word athletic on it.
Yeah, that
is, you know, they won't even let me buy an athletic supporter, never mind, you know, athletic beer. So the fact that they allow, the fact that it's called athletic is just amusing for me. They have a very distinct market. I mean, like I said, less calories than a Coke, no alcohol, tastes great. On a hot summer day when I don't want the alcohol, this Golden is perfect. It's absolutely great.
Yeah, I just logged into their website. The first thing that really made me chuckle is it's Athletic Brewing Company non-alcoholic brews, and it still made me verify my age. Okay, there's that. But then they also have, your purchase gives back. It says, we're donating 10% of all online sales to support restaurant industry employees experiencing hardships in the wake of the COVID-19. Restaurant Employee Relief Fund was created by the National Restaurant Association. Learn more.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. I love how everyone's trying to give back, even in an environment where, I mean, you and I were both reading recently that breweries are in trouble. And the forecast for the number of closures this year due to COVID-19 and the fact that folks can't keep their tap rooms open, it's bad.
Yeah.
And yet you still see breweries trying to give back and help others. So it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah,
so the side of my can here from Athletic says near beer contains less than 0.5% alcohol by volume. And I mentioned to you earlier a quote that I had read. The man who called it near beer was a bad judge of distance.
I like that.
Yeah, so I think we got to get away from the near beer name here. But I'm impressed with Athletic, and not only from the taste of the beer, but from that niche that they're going after. And it's different than what Brauhaus is doing in that they're making that part of their overall beer portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
So you walk into their tap room and you're the designated driver, you can still have a beer.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love that concept. And I know that when you and I talked about this earlier, that you were astonished that I love the idea of non-alcoholic craft beer.
Yes. Yes. I just assumed it would be,
something,
a lot of darts being thrown here.
Yet another way for me to shame and ridicule others, right? Mm-hmm. No, I love the idea because it's innovative, yet it adds it to do this right, to make a non-alcoholic beer or low alcohol beer and have it taste good and be something you want more of regardless of alcohol, takes a lot of skill. Takes a lot of talent. It's much like me always talking about, you know, judge a brewer by their Kolsch or their pills. If they could make an outstanding NA beer, kudos to them. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably one of the highest levels one could achieve in the brewing industry, but that's my opinion. But how that's done, there's so many ways to do that badly. It's not so simple.
It's not, and that's a perfect transition. Why don't we get into the how do you make non-alcoholic beer? Because
sure. It
is, and still make it beer.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, let's keep this at the craft beer level. I mean, the way like Miller and Coors and Bud and those guys do it is sort of out of scope. But there's really three ways that you've got what. Let's grossly separate these things. You have, on the fermentation side, you can design your system and use yeast that actually produce very little alcohol. And they don't have the yeast doesn't have very good alcohol tolerance. So, you know, alcohol gets higher than a percent or two and they die off. They stop producing. or you could stop the fermentation, right? So it's that's specialty yeast and something called arrested fermentation. So the thing that I like to remind people is that without yeast, you basically have sugar water that tastes a bit roasty, like the last dregs of coffee grounds. And meh, really? Is that really what you want? Probably not. Right. So the yeast is really the engine behind the beer. So you ask any reputable brewer and they're going to say, I'm just a janitor. The yeast does all the work. And they're, you know, being facetious, but in a large part, they're not. The yeast are taking in, they're chewing up the sugar. They're spitting out alcohol. That's what they do. But they're also sucking in other stuff, hop components and other compounds coming out of the malt, chewing that up and spitting out other aroma and flavor compounds out the other end. So it's not just about alcohol conversion. It's also about something called biotransformation. And that cannot be minimized. I mean, if you get rid of that component altogether, you don't have beer anymore. You have something else. So that's one way to do it is on the yeast side. And you can ferment at low temperatures with a yeast that's meant to ferment at higher temperatures. There's all sorts of ways to attenuate the alcohol production. Not so common for NA beers. You'll see that with low alcohol beers, like less than 2.5% or so. Hmm. On the other side, you have alcohol removal. So the brewer is doing everything they normally would to create whatever. You're drinking a golden right now. So oh, yeah. They'd make that golden the same way they'd make any golden, and it would pop out the back end at 4.7 to 5.5, right? Somewhere in that range. Now you got to take the alcohol out. And so how do you do that? What are the options there? Well, how do you make moonshine? To make moonshine, I have to distill it, right? Well, what are you distilling? You're distilling what they call mash. And mash is nothing more than malt that's been created, of grains that's been malted. And then you, just like brewing, you make a sugar solution, you boil it, and then you add yeast and you ferment it. And then you boil that, or you heat it, to separate the alcohol from the other liquids. Because alcohol has a lower boiling point than water. So you can heat it up. The alcohol vaporizes, goes through that little coil, right? Just like in Grandpappy's garage, and it drops down into his jug. And now you have alcohol. That's how we get our Everclear, right? And pretty much every other distilled spirit. You do that to beer, we run into a couple of problems. In the standard distillation process, a brewer could take that finished beer, heat it up. It doesn't have to boil, but it can get very, very warm. And the alcohol that's in there is going to vaporize. And the brewer can either let that flash off or they can collect it, which if they're smart, they would collect it and do something else with it. When was the last time a really, really warm beer ever tasted good after it cooled down?
Yeah, that's true.
Right? So there's a lot of things that go on there. Two things, frankly, that are the big problem is oxidation and... It's not only alcohol that's flashing off. It's whatever the low boiling point volatiles are, like, say, all of your hop aroma. Poof, gone, right? You son of a... So the heat is adding energy to the system, and that can add energy to the oxygen that's in the system and speed up the oxidation process. And then it's also that heat is causing not just not the alcohol to flash off, but also the aroma compounds. Bad news, right? If you're talking about a craft beer quality and aroma and sensory experience, yeah. Distilling, straight up distilling, bad idea. However, it's the cheapest and lowest barrier to entry to NA beer. So if you're not tooled up as a brewer to do NA beer, that's probably going to be the first place you look because it's really not going to cost you much. But you might as well just not even start.
Whereas the reverse osmosis technique, that's going to require some materials.
That's on the other end of the spectrum. So If we look to the left side, at the low end, we're talking about low barrier to entry. You're going to heat the beer. You're going to cause oxidative damage. You're going to drive off the aroma compounds, but you're also going to drive off the alcohol. So now you're left with basically something that tastes like boiled cereal water. That's what it is, right? So in order to reduce the oxidative damage from adding heat, brewers can invest a little more and go to something called vacuum distillation. The way things boil or vaporize, and at Siebel I go into ad nauseum, any of my students listening will can attest, talking about what we call vapor pressure. And it's the pressure above the liquid, right, that keeps it in whatever the compounds are in the liquid. So if you have a lot of high pressure above there, it's gonna take a huge amount of energy to get it to, quote, boil, right? So if you go in there with a vacuum pump and you reduce that pressure on top of the liquid, it's going to take a lot less energy to get those chemicals to boil or volatilize. So you would have to add less heat. Less heat, and if it's in a partial vacuum, less oxygen, less air, you're going to do much, much less oxidative damage to the beer. The problem is you're also causing all of those low boiling point or low vaporization point volatiles from hops to flash off as well. So vacuum distillation saves you from the oxidative damage from the heat, but it's still sucking off all kinds of hop aromas. Yeah, bad news, right? So now you're going to have a beer that tastes more like beer and doesn't taste so much like boiled cereal water, but is somewhat lacking in flavor. Now, at that point, they could go and dry hop again if they wanted to. But you've removed all the alcohol, and there's absolutely nothing to keep infections from running wild. That's bad news, too. So you got to be really careful there. So if anything, they would be adding extracts after that in order to bolster that hop presence. And usually that you can taste that in an NA beer that's been vacuum distilled or even regular distilled and had extract added afterwards, as it seems to be very hoppy, but it's also kind of flat in terms of the sensory experience. You don't have all these nuances that you would have with a regular dry hopped beer. It just says, oh, it's hoppy. Well, can you describe it? No, it's hoppy. That's an extract. So that's the middle ground.
Huh.
On the far right side of the graph, and far, I mean, distillation and vacuum distillation are, like, in terms of complexity and barrier cost to entry, are, you know, like a meter apart on the chart. Reverse osmosis is a half a kilometer to the right. And there's nothing in between. And the reason it's so far removed is just because of cost. RO systems use a membrane or a series of membranes that physically limit molecules. So it's like a sieve that you strain your pasta in, but this sieve is so tiny, it only sieves through certain size molecules. So it's very, very tiny. And this alcohol can pass through it. Water can pass through it. And some, we call them organic acids, very small acids that can pass through it, some other components. But most of the large molecules, like your aroma compounds, stay on the other side. They stay in the beer. You're like, bonus. That's awesome. Well, it takes a lot of liquid, a lot of water, and it requires a large amount of energy to pump this material through these membranes. Membranes are very expensive. And as brewers will tell you, pumps and piping and all that sort of stuff, not only is it pricey to put in, but it's also a cleaning nightmare and headaches and points of failure. It adds more complexity to the system and usually a few zeros.
Sure.
So the goo that you get out the other side is alcohol, water, and some of the flavor and taste components that are smaller than, you know, to fit through the membrane. Then what the brewer could do if they wanted to is distill that so that they take the alcohol out, and then whatever's left, the water and the acids that are really not heat affected at all, they don't oxidize, you can add that back to the beer. So now you've really removed it all, but you've kept all of your aroma and flavor components on the other side. You've not added any heat. You haven't introduced any vacuum, nothing like that. So you're selectively separating the alcohol using membrane filters from the beer. And that is the gold standard.
Nice. Nice. So you've got different levels here, and what's so interesting to me is the capital investment for that highest level is not small. It's a decision point.
Huge.
You're not going to do that if you're putting out one or two NA beers in your tap room where the other dozen are normal beers.
Right. No way. That's not for that system. Hell no. And then if you say, well, I want to get into this space and the way I don't have any money to spend, so I'm going to do this as inexpensively as I can. So I'm just going to distill it. Why? Why wreck a perfectly good beer that you could put on tap and run it that way just to address a very, very tidy niche? How about use somebody who's invested heavily in doing it at the gold standard and bring their beer in as a guest tap?
Yep. Yep. And I wonder if, you know, for someone like Athletic, who does nothing but NA beers, I wonder if that's part of the plan for them, that, you know, be a guest tap everywhere. You don't need your own tap room if you're a guest tap everywhere.
No. Once this whole shelter-in-place social distance thing is over, we should make a trip out there and crash mm-hmm. their tap room and have a chat. Because I also noticed on their website they do podcasts and stuff.
Ah, okay.
But and some other things. They've also got some grants that they award to people called the Adventure Grant. And it would be interesting to learn a little more about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, you know, Athletic, I'm not sure they'll let me in the door, but we can
me
try.
Either. Me either. Mm-hmm. But I'll put on sweatpants or something.
I've got, you know,
I don't think anyone who's athletic and that wears sweatpants. They just don't, because they're like, why would I wear something baggy? I want to show off this physique.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, if I have to show up there in a cycling jersey and yoga pants, I've got them. I'll do it. It might cause people to go back to sheltering in place once they see me out and about.
You beat me to it. I'm like, sheltering in place sounds like a whole lot better idea right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love the idea. If we circle back around to why does this exist? It adds another level of expertise. It's like another notch. You know, you're playing a video game and it's like, you've unlocked level whatever. It's like, you've unlocked level non-alcoholic brewer. Congratulations. But you can't really do that unless you start out. Or unless you intentionally design your system to make the highest quality from a sensory science standpoint that you can. Otherwise, you're going to be doing a lot of retooling. Mm-hmm. I don't know. This is something we should investigate a bit. If there are any, I wonder if like Athletic contract brews, because that could be something very interesting, where you would say, here's my recipe, right? Contract brew this, and I don't know if Athletic has an RO system, but based on the quality of their beer, I would be very surprised if they didn't. But let's say brewer XYZ has an RO filtration system, and they make NA beers. If they contract brew that is an interesting idea. Like the beer I'm drinking right now is called Woodshed Oaked IPA from the vintage, and I'd be like, I wonder what would happen if you took that and you just sent it to them or whoever, brewer XYZ, and said, run this through your system and ship me back NA Woodshed.
Could they do it? That's very, very interesting.
I'm
sure they could do it, but how would it be?
Right. And because you didn't design, technically, from a chemistry, a physical chemistry standpoint, it should be exactly the same, just with the alcohol removed.
It should be.
As opposed to distilling or vacuum distilling, which would alter the experience. But I'm curious now. I wonder if anybody's doing contract NA beer.
It would make all the sense in the world. Because, you know, I talked about it from a guest staff perspective, but certainly having a beer under your own name, even if it's being contract brewed by someone else, it does allow you to not make those investments. And not right. only in hardware, but just in time of learning how to do this, you go to the experts.
Exactly. I mean, we're spitballing here, right? So it's, the market's not huge yet, just like craft beer wasn't huge in 89. So if you look at the number of contract brewing facilities that are out there right now, that's all they do is contract brew other people's recipes that come to them, whether they're a home brewer or they bought a recipe from somewhere and they don't have a physical brewing facility. They go to another contract operation and boom, they start pumping out beer for them. Octopi Brewing, in right next door to where I live here in near Madison, that's all they do, contract brewing. But it's normal beer. Is anybody doing contract NA beer?
Certainly an interesting idea. It would be so logical for someone who's got the hardware and got the expertise to be doing that. And
I would be looking to, you know, maximize the production of my facility, assuming that, you know, that XYZ is not at capacity. But.
And some of the others, you know, we had looked at just some of the ones that New Brewer was talking about recently. So Brooklyn Beer has a non-alcoholic beer. Bravis Brewing has done a couple. One of them being a Raspberry Goza, which you and I had talked about the fact that that's a, with something like a Goza, it's easier to mask imperfections.
Well, there's
in that process.
There's that, but it's also relying on other flavor contributors to make it a Goza. So, you know, you have the souring bacteria agent, you have salt, you have coriander or other raspberry in this case. So I think NA beers also are a bit more welcoming a bit more welcoming of other ingredients that maybe our growers could benefit from. As I'm reading here of our friends at Brooklyn, smells like beer with a sweet note to it, said one panelist. bread crust and a touch of caramel are also present on the nose. The beer is gem clear with a deep reddish amber liquid, is topped with a frothy cream-colored head.
Making me thirstier. I have a beer in front of me.
And then, of course, BrewDog, the punk rockers, at least that's how they like to portray themselves, has one. They've got a couple. One's called Nanny State, and the other one's called Stout AF. That are
nice.
But, you know, they're probably all way over-attenuated, just saying. but my neighbor is really into the NA beers coming out of Germany. And they're quite nice. He shared a few with me a couple of weeks ago, and I was just astonished at how traditionally German they were. Klaus Taylor has a dry hopped ale that is just outstanding. And I'm very, very pleased with that. And of course, on every frickin' list I find, the number one is Athletic Brewing Run Wild IPA. If you would have just given it to me and said, hey, try this IPA, I would have been like, that is an outstanding IPA. What's the ABV?
Zero.
Yeah. It's incredible.
And I remember, and I'm sure you do too, being in college and...
Not really.
Well, my point, exactly.
There are pictures. I've been told I was there.
Handing a virgin mixed cocktail to girls and watching them get drunk off of them when there's no alcohol in there. So I'd love to put some of this golden, which is very tasty, in front of someone and see when they get buzzed off of it.
Yeah.
If they don't know. Because, you know, how much of that is in your head?
Yep. Yeah, I think that's fair.
So a couple others that they call out that are pure non-alcohol breweries. In Canada, you've got Partake, which... seems to be doing very well. And then one of the bigger ones now is Surreal Brewing out in California.
Yep.
And not only are they doing non-alcohol, but they've got a couple of low-gluten options as well.
Oh, nice. Ah, you're talking my language.
Now, I know that's come a long way, gluten-free. I remember when that started to become a thing and everything was made out of, like, sorghum and...
Yeah, I could talk at length about... Because folks that don't know, I have a gluten problem myself. I don't have celiac disease, but I've got this other thing called non-celiac gluten sensitivity. So I have to be careful with my beer. And there's a brewery here in Madison called Alt Brew that has won awards for their gluten-free beer in standard beer categories. That's how good it is. Trevor Easton is the owner brewer, and he and I and Joe, our buddy and former chemist, worked together to develop some of those recipes. We ought to have Trevor on. We ought to talk about gluten-free beers. And
the opportunity for growers who are looking for another crop to do, and how badly Trevor struggles to find good gluten-free grains.
A lot of, to your point, a lot of innovation that's possible out there by still being in the beer category with not being what you and I would both describe as either beer adjacent or I'd say beer corrupting.
Adjacent?
Adjacent. Adjacent. Okay. You know, I'm getting a buzz off of this 0% ABV.
Yeah. You were just talking about girls drinking non-alcoholic and getting all in. Yeah, it works. It works.
I better just move on to some kind of a slushy something or other and take my lumps.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it is innovation. It's science. We love when it's science. It's marketing. It's market. I'm so curious about how they're doing things. To your point, once we can walk into a tap room, I'm going to head down to Athletic and see what we can learn from them.
I'm coming with you.
Okay, sure. Is that a threat or a promise?